Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Tracks. We're going to walk through the four-episode miniseries of Eyes of Wakanda. It just dropped on Disney+. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, I saw some people online complaining, and I think they're right, but I wanted your perspective on this. I saw some people online complaining that Disney dropped Eyes of Wakanda with no promotion at all. Was that basically your experience of encountering this weird beast of a four-episode animated miniseries?
It was my exact experience, Bob, if not even worse, because I had to go into Disney and I went to all the featured stuff. It wasn't there. I went to search. I typed in Black Panther. It didn't come up. I typed in Wakanda and I don't even think I saw it there. But then I went to the Marvel Hub and I was able to find it. And it was there on the Marvel Hub on one of the features, somewhere on there. But why is this so hidden? It is what it is. Well, they could get views on this and...
I'm going to do my best Joe Rogan voice.
It's real crazy.
Man, and they want to put that in your vaccine?
They want to put Black Panther in my vaccine.
I can't believe they think they can get away with that. But yeah, it is strange. It seems this would be an easy thing to promote. And I don't know. It's not perfect, but I like it substantially better than What If.
I do too, yeah. What If went on way too long. And I wanted my What If stuff to not all come together into its own What If universe. That'd me off more than anything.
That's violating the point of it, right? Is it supposed to be an anthology show?
That happened. Why am I getting these characters crossing over? I don't care that much about them more than one episode. I don't want to explore any of this character anymore. It's just more of a What If thing. That's a good idea. Okay, cool. And move on.
And I don't want to die on this hill because I didn't really like What If comics that much. But when we were kids, I feel like every What If comic ended in, like, the characters dying.
It ended in a way that made, oh, you read the real stuff, because this is what happens when you don't follow that pattern. When you're not on the prime timeline.
All right. Well, let's go through the four episodes of this miniseries. We'll make a few observations. We'll go through, make a few observations, pick a favorite moment for each episode, then maybe we'll talk a little generally about it at the end. Does that sound good?
Sounds good, Bob. So the first episode is Into the Lion's Den. It takes place in 1260 BC, where former Dora Milaje Noni is sent on a mission to hunt down a rogue Hattusarazi known as the Lion.
And did you remember from our Black Panther comics and from the Black Panther movie who the Dora Milaje and who the Hattusarazi are?
The Dora Milaje aren't they like the guards of Wakanda, the ones with the spears?
Usually they do have spears, they're all female, and they're usually portrayed as the bodyguards of the king or queen of Wakanda.
Yeah.
Although I think in later stuff, there's been a tendency to have them be more generally an elite senior military group. But originally, they were just the bodyguards of the king or queen of Wakanda.
The Hattusarazi, they go outside of Wakanda, right?
Yeah. They're the CIA / special ops of Wakanda. In the comics, they often show up as like in white dog costumes, white jackals, white wolves.
Are they called war dogs in this?
And then I also wanted to ask, do you know in terms of actual world history why the year 1200 BCE is significant?
No, Bob. And I'm glad you do, because I had to use Wikipedia to make sure I knew what time I was in.
They're alluding to real history.
Yes.
This episode. So around 1200 is usually dated as the Bronze Age collapse, which is a broader phenomenon too, but in the Eastern Mediterranean world, it means the Egyptian Empire and the Assyrian Empire over in what's now Iraq and Eastern Turkey and Lebanon, Syria, they both really contract. They don't fall totally, but they really contract. And they're weakened. And then in Greece, you have what's called the Dark Ages among the Greek city-states. And historians are real argumentative, and archaeologists are real argumentative about exactly how much of a collapse this was and also what caused it. Sometimes they blame climate change. Sometimes it's diseases. Sometimes they say volcanic eruptions. And then there's also a fact that there's some archaeological evidence, I think mainly from Egypt, about a series of raiders who are called the Sea People coming in and Egypt having battles with the Sea People. And so here, the Sea People are being led by a rogue Wakandan. That was a funny thing to do, have a Marvel version of the Bronze Age collapse.
I know Bob just gave a really great history, but for you layman folk like me, I'm just going to say, it's what if Black Panther was on some pirate ships?
Indeed, indeed. I think they were trying to make you nostalgic for either DuckTales or Pirates of Dark Water.
Oh, totally. Or more recently, all I can think about was Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
That was going to be one of the reviews I brought in. Somebody said about this episode specifically that, quote, this show gives me major Assassin's Creed vibes.
Yeah, that's what kept me watching, Bob.
I'm glad. It wasn't Pirates of Dark Water. It wasn't DuckTales nostalgia. It was only memories of Assassin's Creed, man. Yeah.
Bob's there for the history lesson. I'm there for the nostalgia of video games.
So, Matt, you haven't watched much Stargate, right?
I haven't, no.
Okay. From what little you've seen of the movie, does the ancient golden Condon sci-fi technology kind of give you a Stargate vibe?
It does, yeah. I can never quite understand what actually is going on with the vibranium or the tech that the Wakandans have or possess. You can strike it and it explodes. Sometimes it makes gases. I wish I had some book that explained Wakandan technology. Somebody make that for me.
I'm sure there is a book. I'm sure you just have to pay Disney like $35 for it, and it's not very good.
I want to check out all these.
I do think there's an interesting design element in the Wakandan technology in this, where it does remind me of how the MCU portrays Stark technology, too. Just in terms of the visual style of it, and like you say, also like Stark technology, it's pretty generic.
Yeah, and everything has a shiny arc reactor in it, or everything has a shiny medallion in the middle. It's all just that one piece.
It shines. So in that sense, it is interesting because it does give us prop identity to the whole universe. The last thing I wanted to say about this Into the Lion's Den episode, Matt, although if you got other thoughts, I would be curious to hear, is did the ideological conflict between Noni, who's the Dora Milaje, who's on the mission, and then the lion, who's the rogue, Hatut Zarazi, leading the Sea People, didn't it recall the fights and the arguments between T'Challa and Killmonger in the first Black Panther movie?
Oh, 100%. I felt that throughout the entire series, really. A lot of the scenes to me seem like recreations of some of the stuff we saw in the Black Panther film.
I'll get to a little more of that. And it's funny, like one reviewer was saying that, you know, it's not Disney if the politics aren't questionable, right? Because in Black Panther, you have Nani or T'Challa being the voice of the status quo, and then Killmonger and the Lion being the voice of the revolutionary challenge that will disrupt the status quo. But at what cost, Matt? But at what cost?
Wakanda will be gone in 500 years.
Another reviewer put it that I thought was really funny. It was wild that Disney made a 4-episode miniseries doubling down on the idea that Killmonger was right.
True.
So what was your favorite moment in Into the Lion's Den, Matt?
So towards the end of the episode, The ship explodes after they set off one of the devices. And Noni is desperately trying to swim and grab up any piece of evidence she can that she killed the lion. And she goes through a couple of things she almost gets her hands on, but then I was worried she was going to drown. So she's able to grab his mask and go back up. But I just really felt that scene was intense.
I really like that scene. I think it was a little earlier, but it's same dynamic of her swimming underneath the ship and seeing the skulls and the skeletons in the underwater cages. I thought that was very, very cool visual. Even though ideologically, it's of course, oh, this guy is preaching revolution. Of course, he must be terrible. He must do atrocities.
Right.
Well, Matt, should we move on to episode 2, Legends and Lies?
So in Legends and Lies, Memnon, a Wakandan infiltrator, fights along Achilles during a pivotal moment in the Trojan War.
Well, Matt, did you catch that this episode seemed to totally be going for Achilles as the proto-Hulk and Odysseus as the proto-Tony Stark?
Oh, 100%.
Matt, I had a theory that each episode was meant to recall a different Disney animated movie. So, DuckTales for number 1. Number 2, Hercules, right?
Just the Odyssey itself. We got a new movie coming out with Chris Nolan, so maybe they're pumping it.
Yeah, and that was one of the funny reviews I found online. Is this a prequel to Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey?
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, that's funny.
I will say the animation, though. The animation, you're absolutely right, because I feel like the Marvel studio animation is getting more and more Disney-fied as time goes on, because this did look a lot like Hercules.
Yeah, and it's interesting, just the stylistic convergence of Marvel into Disney and vice versa is funny. And Matt, I do have to ask, when you say the Odyssey, are you picturing Wishbone's Odyssey episode, or are you picturing the Armand Asante Odyssey?
The Armand Asante Odyssey, Bob. I do remember the Wishbone episode you're talking about.
I thought it was important that the listeners know what's going on in your mind.
The one we watched in ninth grade.
For me, it's Wishbone, not Armand Asante, but I understand that for you, it's Armand Asante. So, Matt, will you forgive me? Will you forgive me if I go into a brief description of some of the interesting Iliad parallels here?
Of course, go right ahead.
Okay, so Memnon, who's the Wakandan infiltrator, at first I thought that was just a shortening or a corruption of Agamemnon, who is a king involved in the Siege of Troy with Achilles and Odysseus. But I'm actually just ignorant, and it turns out there is an Ethiopian king in versions of the Trojan War story called Memnon. So, like, that's, he's actually a figure of legend. It's cool that they use that. So I have a friend who's a classicist who knows Greek, he knows Latin. He liked the first episode okay with its depiction of the Bronze Age collapse, but he had real concerns with this episode. And one thing I knew but I just wasn't thinking of is that Achilles gets killed before the Greeks sack Troy. It showed Achilles participating in the sack of Troy. I should have known that. I didn't think about that, and it doesn't really bother me. But then he had another point that I thought was really funny and I should have thought of, but I didn't think of, is Achilles had his Myrmidonian warriors, right?
Right.
They're often in Homer called ant people, and also in other sources too, I think. And so he was saying that it was a real missed opportunity, that they should have had like Ant-Man looking helmets. That would have been really fun.
That would have been cool. Well, Bob, you know, we do have the Trojan horse showing up, and like, Achilles does get to be a part of that.
But you know what definitely did happen, right, Matt?
What?
You know what definitely did happen?
Bob.
Achilles and Memnon boned, right?
Well, of course they did. For sure.
Yeah.
There was too much buildup at the end there for him to care that much.
The best reviews I saw about the fact that they were sexually involved was, one person put it as, you put Achilles in something, it's automatically gay. I don't make the rules. Matt, what was your favorite moment in episode 2, Legends and Lies?
I was waiting for that tendon to get cut, Bob. I was waiting for that Achilles heel. Just, I knew it was going to come at some point. Didn't know it was going to come from Memnon.
This recalls what I was waiting for in the third episode. So we'll get there. Good choice. I did think the image in Achilles and Memnon's fight of Achilles throwing fire on Memnon's weird purple energy gauntlet, I thought that was actually a pretty cool visual. Episode 3, Lost and Found, what goes down?
Lost and Found, Bob. In 1400 AD, Basha retrieves a stolen Wakandan artifact embedded in a dragon statue, but unknowingly brings a stowaway in the form of Iron Fist. They got airplanes, Bob, in 1400.
Airplanes in 1400, baby. So this was definitely the best episode, right?
That was really good. It was a little more fun. It was a Bosch's character, though. He's an interesting one.
Not just because of the Iron Fist connection, although that was a big thing for me. Have you read any Iron Fist comics or anything where Kun Loon is involved?
No, I haven't read much of any Iron Fist.
That's something we maybe could do at some point.
He defeats a dragon and gets the cool fist. Is that how that works?
Indeed, that's how it works. And in fact, he has to kind of bear hug the dragon over its open and burning heart such that it gives him the tattoo.
Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. So I guess I'm caught up with what could go on with Iron Fist.
You know all there is to know about Iron Fist now. Matt, so the Disney animated movie this is going for is Mulan, right?
Oh, that's got the same style.
And then I did want to ask, do you feel Basha violated the Wakandan espionage prime directive? And once we do actually have the confrontation between Basha and the Iron Fist, they basically just do the maglev.
Exactly.
From the first Panther movie. Which I thought that was maybe a little too much. Couldn't you just do an original fight scene?
It's a little too much on the nose. They were mine carts though, Bob. Just a little different.
Yeah. Did Black Panther come out like 2017, 2018? It's a movie that's 8 years old, which, I mean, also it's insane that that movie is 8 years old.
2018.
It's insane that that movie is 7 years old, but it's also a little weird, and the MCU does this a lot. They did this with the time travel in Avengers 4, but it's always weird when you have to watch nostalgia for something that was 7 years old in the MCU, which they go to fairly frequently.
So we've just been exposed to so much content. It seems like it hasn't been that long ago.
This was obviously already present between the lion and Nani in the first episode and Achilles and Memnon in the second episode. But as we have the fight between Basha and the Iron Fist, it was just wild that I was, oh, literally every episode of this miniseries is going to be dictated by sexual tension in a fight that's basically just covering up huge sexual tension.
Yeah. They couldn't do those kind of scenes in Disney, so they have to just have fights. Anytime you see a fight scene, it's actually supposed to be them having sex.
Indeed. So what was your favorite moment in episode 3, Matt?
So, Bob, at the end of the episode, they throw Iron Fist in a closet to try to justify to, like, the High Council that this is a training exercise. Just that whole scene in general is pretty funny to me.
Yeah, it was also hilarious that it turns out that they just want the thing that's in the statue, yeah. And Iron Fist just wants the statue, and so Basha's friend Ivo is just like, that was all you had to do.
Yeah, that's what kills me.
Yeah. I was mildly annoyed at how they mostly kept Jurani actually using her Iron Fist off-screen. They didn't show it very much, but when you actually see her use it at the end, that was a pretty sweet payoff, I do have to admit.
Bob, in the last episode...
Last minute.
In 1896, the Black Panther from 500 years in the future warns her Wakandan ancestor, Prince Tafari, of the importance of a very specific artifact.
Yeah.
You ever want to see Black Panther and Terminator, guys? This is it. Black Panther, Terminator.
Yeah, that's the final Disney movie that it's referencing. To be honest, I was pretty bored with this one until the late 24th century Black Panther showed up. And I did just want to say how wild it is that this show spans from the 13th century BCE to the 24th century CE. That's wild.
It is wild. I will say, Bob, that the aliens that are introduced look very similar to the aliens we have experienced in Babylon 5.
So you were thinking...
Oh, man, they look just like the shadows.
I wasn't thinking that when I was watching it, but now that you say that, I see where you're coming from.
And then there's time travel involved to solve the problem.
But they had kaiju, which the shadows didn't actually have. Yeah. To say that it invalidates the comparison, just to say the kaiju were something else.
Right. And also, the Black Panther from the future, the outfit, straight out of, I believe, Mass Effect. That is one sad thing about being exposed to so much sci-fi like stuff. It's like it starts to run together. That outfit was out of Mass Effect.
So if there's a Disney movie involved in every one of them, is there a video game involved in every one of them? We said Assassin's Creed for the first one. I guess God of War for the second one.
Well, the thing is...
What would the third one be?
I don't know, Bob, because Assassin's Creed covers a lot of time like this.
True.
So you could really just say Assassin's Creed for all of them, except the final one would have to be some sort of Mass Effect would probably be your final episode.
But to do a different one, yeah, I guess God of War makes sense for two, right?
Reminds me of, like... When I was watching the third episode, it reminded me of Star Wars a great deal.
I was going to guess like Final Fantasy or Kingdom Hearts.
I could totally see these characters get fitted with Kingdom Hearts in this third episode. Good job, Bob. That video game college is rubbing off on you.
Even though I've never
played
any of these games.
They're quite complex, Bob.
How does that stupid copypasta from 10 years ago go? The thing about Rick and Morty is you have to have a very high IQ.
Yeah. Bob's just naming titles, and I'm like, yeah, they fit. That would work. Not much more to it than that.
Matt, what was your favorite moment from the last episode?
Well, I like the final shot of Killmonger about to take the axe from the London Museum, which is straight out of one of the first Black Panther.
That's a stronger use of nostalgia than the maglift fight scene. I thought the mind meld that the 24th century Black Panther does on one of the past characters was cool.
Bob, you had some interesting reviews on the show. What are some of your takes?
I'll just let you respond to these one by one. So Russians really seem to hate this show. The most representative one I found was a Russian, and I had to run this through Google Translate. So I don't know. Maybe it mistranslated it, but I tend to think it probably didn't. There were several negative Russian reviews. Also, a lot of negative Spanish reviews of the show, interestingly. But the Russian was, why the fuck does this exist?
I said the same thing about Ironheart, which I haven't watched yet.
You could pretty much ask that of every Disney series, except for maybe like WandaVision, right?
I can't think of anything that could fit with any of the more recent stuff that's come out from Marvel.
Even as much as I like X-Men 97 and as much as I like Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, there is a little bit of that even to those, right?
Why is this here other than just the nostalgia dopamine fix?
Yeah. And then This is a more thoughtful review in English that I thought did actually get to this problem where, and this is just excerpting from a larger review, but the reviewer wrote, "Another visually lush series that stuck in Marvel's prestige paradox. Too expensive to fail, too safe to matter."
Too safe to matter. What does that mean to you, Bob?
It means that they have to follow along with the shared universe, so they can't do anything dramatically satisfying, and they can't do anything too risky that would affect the overarching universe. It's basically my complaint about Creature Commandos.
Like how the season 2 of Peacemaker coming up soon, it's not going to impact the DCU that much, whatever the new thing is. There's no way they would do much with that.
Yeah, the right way to do that is to focus on Peacemaker and the supporting cast.
Right.
But when you really emphasize making the connections to the outer universe, that's going to be sad.
When you look at Too Safe to Matter, you're thinking of, in the sense of this specific show, the time frame is all in the past. You're not looking at modern MCU. You're not looking at anything that's really going to affect much. Yeah, they did link it to Killmonger.
I think what the reviewer means, and I would co-sign this, even though I like this show, and I think I like this show more than this reviewer, and maybe even a little more than you. Although only a little. I agree with the mild criticisms of it you've made. What I'm saying is that it has to so tie itself to the events of Black Panther and echoing them so much. And it also can't do anything that would change what we think about Wakanda, or it can't do anything that would challenge the timeline.
Right.
Of Black Panther 1 and 2 and whatever their nebulous plans for the future are. So it has to play it very safe narratively, I think is what the reviewer is saying. I think I would co-sign that.
Two more.
One of them, I'll go with the easier one first. This was in Portuguese, and this is actually meant as praise. And I thought it was a very interestingly poetic way to describe it, because it was in the midst of a positive review. The Portuguese reviewer said that this is not a spinoff. It's a whisper from within a screaming franchise.
That's deep.
I think the Portuguese reviewer means that this has control and focus, whereas the MCU in general is chaotic and all over the place.
I didn't read the whole review, so I'm just based on what I'm reading there, it just sounds like this was a non-entity in itself because there's so much other crap that's screaming for attention. Fantastic Four and whatever the bigger franchise pieces.
The one I wanted to save last was the one I thought we would think was controversial. And it also brings up something that we watched to do on the podcast and then decided we didn't want to do on the podcast, which is this review. And I saw this echoed in several different ways, but this reviewer expressed it as, it's no Predator killer of killers, but it's not bad.
Okay. I couldn't make it through Predator killer of killers. But after watching this, I want to go back and watch it now just to compare it.
To me, this is much better than Predator Killer of Killers. I can see what people respond to in Predator Killer of Killers more, but Predator Killer of Killers annoyed me a lot.
What I really want to see is Wakanda versus Predator.
There is a comic of that. I thought it was fine. I thought about us doing it on the podcast and decided it wasn't that interesting. It's Black Panther versus Predator. It's fine. Yeah. They're doing all kinds of Marvel versus Predator comics right now, and there's some sort of vague story among them that I haven't been following.
So we might get that animated movie, Bob. That's exciting. They're both on the House of Mouse.
Have you seen the trailer for the new Predator, the live-action Predator movie?
I have, yes, and it looks very
terrible, right?
Humanizing to the Predator.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like you necessarily need to have seen Predator Killer of Killers to watch the new Predator movie, but it does look like it's a very direct follow-up to Predator Killer of Killers. I'm still going to go see it because it's a Predator movie, but I don't think we're going to cover it for
yes. We'll see how it goes, Bob, once it gets closer to time.
Well, Matt, I wanted to end with, if you're amenable to reading through my Marvel animation ranking and then you making snide comments.
So, Bob, this is your animated ranking, your number one, your top show.
And this is all Marvel animation that I've seen substantial amounts of.
Okay. So
I've necessarily seen everything of all of these, but I've seen most of them.
All right. So you've got X-Men 92, 97 as number one. That's just a given. Everybody knows that's the best. Number two, you've got Spider-Man 94. Nothing wrong with that. Number three, you have Silver Surfer. It is a fun show to watch. Your mind has to be in the right place.
I wouldn't mind us maybe doing two episodes on it, break it in half.
It's super short, so it's not a chore to watch.
And you do have to warn everybody, it ends on a cliffhanger that's never resolved.
Spectacular Spider-Man. It's
number four.
Number four. I did like that show when it was on. I watched most of it. Number five.
And also, let me just say to warn people, Spectacular Spider-Man, also incomplete. It gets two seasons, and I can't remember if it ends on a cliffhanger, but it's clearly they were going for, I think, a 5 or 6 season arc that they didn't get to do. Yeah. Also from the writers of Young Justice and Gargoyles.
Yeah, it was well written. I remember being disappointed that this is the one that was canceled.
It was canceled because of the Disney acquisition.
All right, number five, Bob, you've got Wolverine and the X-Men, which...
Same problem as Spectacular Spider-Man, canceled by the Disney acquisition.
That was one I really wanted to see more of, and I kind of tried to play off as though it were a sequel to 92.
I thought it was a sequel to X-Men Evolution.
You are correct. My bad. That is my mistake. I like to think that in my brain that it was a sequel to X-Men 92. I'm not saying it was. When I watched it, in my mind, I pictured it being that way. You have X-Men Evolution down on the list. I'll talk about it in a second.
Now you're making me want to rewatch Wolverine and the X-Men, trying to think about, because I watched it right after watching X-Men Evolution.
Yeah,
now you make me want to like watch it and try to think of it as a 92 sequel.
Yeah, because Professor X, essentially, he's not a part of it, right? That's the one where he dies at the beginning. But that was before, of course, we had the release of X-Men 97, which fills in all those gaps. So. All right, Bob. Number six, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. We covered that. I may have put that above Wolverine and the X-Men, but you're good.
I will say this is not an alt for all time, right? This is just season one, obviously. I think it's very possible that Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man could move. I don't necessarily think it will, but I could see it getting to number two by the end of its run. Even if it doesn't get that far, I could see it getting way above Spectacular or Wolverine, but just not off the first season. I got to see more.
All right, you've got Eyes of Wakanda, the one we just reviewed at number seven, which I'm good with. Number eight, you got the 94 Fantastic Four show, which... Number nine, you got Hulk 96. Now, I didn't really ever watch any of this. I just played like the video game that came out around the same time.
I forgot about that.
I don't have much to go by there, but I assume it was worse than Fantastic Four.
Neither Fantastic Four or the Hulk cartoon are very good, but they're not terrible. They're just not good.
From what I remember of what I watched of FF94, they try to retell the better Fantastic Four stories from largely Kirby. And so you're getting these short snippets of these stories that were played out in the comics and they're a little more modernized, but hey, it's nothing great. So, okay, Hulk 96, like I said, I hadn't watched much of it. Then number 10, you've got Avengers 99.
Oh, it's horrible, but it's awesome because it's basically them trying to have the 90s Avengers be the X-Men 92. Horrible. Hawkeye is their Wolverine. Tigra is their Rogue. I believe she's even voiced by their Rogue. Scarlet Witch is their Storm.
Number 11, you got X-Men Evolution, and I hated X-Men Evolution.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, that was the one with the really young set of X-Men, and they really tried to play the teenage thing, but it was more to jokes than it was the seriousness.
Just say to listeners right quick, like, I would say the break-off between good to meh is between Eyes of Wakanda and FF94, and then the break-off...
Eyes of Wakanda is the stick.
It's the bar. That's fair to say right now. And then to me, the break off between interesting and fun to awful is between Avengers 99 to X-Men Evolution.
A lot of this I haven't watched, so that probably fits in really well. Number 12, you have Iron Man 94, which I remember it being awful when we were kids.
It was a really bad G.I. Joe ripoff. One of those 80s, 90s toy cartoons. It had the same formula as one of them.
It had a really weird theme song, too, that I Am Iron Man with him going. And it had a 90s Tony Stark with long hair. You can only cover so many Tony Stark stories in a children's cartoon that don't involve being an alcoholic. And
and it did have a lot of good characters in it, Spider-Woman and War Machine, but it was still a bad show.
But at least it told tales of Iron Man to an audience who probably wouldn't have had any of that until the MCU. That was my first real exposure to Iron Man was that cartoon and then the action figures that came along with it and all the stuff that they dropped for the show. Number 13, Bob, is going to be controversial to probably any listeners. You put What If.
In fairness, I think I've only seen season one.
Okay, well, I did not like season one enough to even care for season two.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some of the stories aren't that bad, but it doesn't do what it sets out to do.
Iron Man 94 is terrible, but I have some childhood nostalgia for it.
Now, number 14, I have just a tiny twinge of nostalgia for, but it was an awful show. That's the MTV Spider-Man, and it was supposed to be almost a sequel
to be in the Raimi universe.
To the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, they brought back a lot of the actors to do voice acting. And it is awful. The CGI they use looks like garbage. But the only reason I have nostalgia for it is it's the only Spider-Man series I own on DVD. Because it was just one DVD, and I think somebody bought it for me. They was like, hey, do you like Spider-Man?
I knew it was a thing back then, but I never watched it back then. I watched it in Spectacular Spider-Man before Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man came out. Although I didn't watch all of MTV Spider-Man. I watched like 4 episodes, which I think is enough to know.
Enough to make a good judgment on that. Number 15, Bob, you've got Spidey Unlimited. I think everybody's in agreement that's the worst.
Unspeakable.
There are people out there, though, who are on YouTube that have gone back to rewatch it just to try to justify what they were doing. But those are some hilarious videos. But yeah, I still won't make me go back and watch it.
I get that after Spider-Man 94, they had to go into a totally different direction. I respect that. But oh my God, it didn't work.
So, Bob, yeah, I can't think of anything you've left out Marvel-wise.
I've never seen Hulk, Agents of Smash.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
I've never seen... What else have I not seen? I haven't seen enough of the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon.
The Fantastic Four that came out in the aughts.
Is that the anime one?
No, it wasn't anime. It had more of the same style as the X-Men Evolution type thing.
I did leave off Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and I haven't seen all of that, but I think I've seen enough of that. I guess I would put it as the new number 11 above X-Men Evolution.
I actually didn't mind that one as much.
It's really challenging to watch, though, as a modern person. There is a more modern Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, but it's a show. It's not aimed at 10-year-olds like it should be.
Really? It's 10 and up over here.
And I think in the new one, it's just like Peter and Miles and Spider-Gwen.
I've seen that advertised. Yeah, that's a baby show.
There is 2 Avengers cartoons besides the 90s one. And I think the middle one is supposed to be the good one. And I've liked what I've seen of that, but I just don't feel like I've seen enough of it to fully judge.
Okay. Well, Bob, I'd say your order, I'm good with it. I think you're pretty spot on with this. And if anybody disagrees, we've got two words for you.
I was really hoping for some aggressive pushback from you, Matt.
Honestly, I've watched most of the stuff, and we're in agreement with where it falls. I think it's more of the MCU, the actual live-action stuff, where you and I would be going to town.
I haven't seen enough of some of that stuff to even rank it, you know?
So, yeah, Bobby, your animation list looks fine. But as far as MCU proper live-action goes, we'd probably be way more disagreement.
Well, if I ever go see another MCU movie, we'll put together a list, argue about it.
Animation-wise, Marvel's where it's at, other than the Justice League Unlimited and Batman Animated Series.
Yeah, I would say that I think DC's animation is way stronger.
That's where we could fight. We could fight pretty hard on that.
Maybe we should just do a whole episode where we argue about that. That might be amusing.
I'd be down for that, because honestly, DC animation, other than Animated Series Batman, it's forgettable.
Okay, well, we won't do this anytime, but I'll put together a ranking of DC animation, and I'll see if there's anything that I haven't watched that would be easy to watch, or at least watch enough to get a sense of, and then we can have an argument about it.
Sounds good, Bob.
All right, sounds good, Matt. We will do that for some point in the nebulous future. In the meantime, I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Thanks for joining us for Eyes of Wakanda. Please stay tuned to our Star Trek Strange New Worlds coverage. And we'll probably be covering Alien: Earth. And if we're not covering Alien: Earth, we'll be covering something cool from Marvel or DC Comics. So check us out as we do that.
All right. Thanks for listening.